3D printing today, show number 551, understanding your own requirements, organic supports and full contact, Greengate 3D.
Welcome back to 3D Printing Today, the podcast about all aspects of 3D printing. Hobby, professional, industrial, it doesn't matter, we cover it all. My name's Andy Cohen, and I'm here with Mr. Whitney Potter.
How are you doing, Andy?
I'm doing pretty good, so let's see, what's the story this week? Oh yes, I got an email from an old friend of ours, a fellow named Joe Prusa.
Joe.
I haven't heard from Joe in what, a couple of months?
Must be weeks at least.
Yeah, but I noticed he got a nice haircut, and he's trimmed his beard a bit.
Oh, wow, that's nice.
Because he did a vid about a new product that they announced called the Prusa Core 1, and I think it's worthy of our discussion. It certainly got a lot of discussion on our Google group.
Cool.
3D printing tips and tricks. And I invite everybody who's listening to join. It's free with no ads, and I'm there all the time procuring and making sure there's no flame wars. Anyway, so Joe announces the new Core 1. Have you looked at it?
Yeah, I have. I'm looking at it right now, actually.
So in a nutshell, it's a Core XY contained machine, the fully active chamber temperature control. And they describe it with a rugged exoskeleton design. I do believe in the vid they say that the casing is bent steel, not injected molded plastic.
Okay.
And it is Core XY with all linear sliders. And in my opinion, that's the biggie. That I think the all linear sliders is what will differentiate, along with a couple of other things, but I think that's the biggie for differentiating between Prusa Research and Bamboo, the Bamboo machine. Now, the price point for this machine is, I think it's the same as the Carbon X1 from Bamboo, which is the market leader right now, we are told. Don't know for sure, but we're hearing that's the case. Looking at the images of this thing, I got to tell you, and I'm just guessing here, I've got no evidence to prove this. Just from looking at it, knowing this company, I think they've partnered with a Chinese company to develop a lot of the hardware.
What leads you to
The way it looks, the way the casings look, the way the door, there's things about it that looks to me like they spoke to the same producer that made the new Ultimaker Sprint printer.
Well, it has a very polished look, but that comes from the technology that's being used to manufacture it, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I'm like, we had printers, like, you remember our old printer bots, right? The printer bot Metal Simple was made using that same technology. It's basically bent sheet metal. So now they're just using that for the case, and it's a little bit more involved. I have no idea where the parts are being manufactured, but there's no reason it couldn't all be done in Europe.
But we all know if you're looking carefully at how things are produced in China, there are centralized, city-sized production facilities. And the probability is really high that they're all using the same production facility, whether it's FlashForge, whether it's Ultimaker, whether it's Prusa Research.
Well, it's possible. They're claiming a made in EU, but we've always understood and accepted that. I mean, there are components on a printer. I mean, stepper motors, circuit boards, flat panel, touch screens, all the electronic components, all of that is made in China on almost any printer you'll find.
Probably these linear guides.
Yeah, the linear guides are as well, probably. So there are definitely, Chinese-made components, but there are on all of our printers.
Yeah.
So, I have no idea where they're getting their parts, but that doesn't really bother me that much.
But here's the thing: they say in this release thing that it'll be shipping in January. Now, Ordinarily, I'd be like, oh, that sounds good. It won't make it in time for Christmas.
Yeah.
The fully assembled versions will be shipped, they say, in January. But remember, they told us that the Prusa XL would ship 1 year after they announced it, and it took 2 years.
Right.
So if they're making this printer themselves, then I would not trust that date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No way.
Well, on the other hand, this is not breaking any new ground, whereas the Prusa XL broke a lot of new ground.
It sure did.
So
a very, very differentiated machine.
Right. This looks to be a very high quality single extruder Core XY machine. So if single extruder meets your use case, this looks like a killer machine.
But I think that this kind of supports my theory
uh-huh.
that this is mostly produced, at least parts wise, elsewhere, because I could see them saying to the producer, well, we want at least two extruders. And they say back, no, I can't do that. Our setups are to bend the casings for this much space. Mm. You know, we're going to produce them this speed. You're to do a tool changer or some form of IDEX means we have to change all of our design. Mm. Mm. And if you want this by January, this is what you're going to get.
Well, if the case exactly matches someone else's, and I haven't gone through all the all the research on that, so I couldn't say, then you might have a point there. But on the other hand, the bent sheet metal stuff is basically a CNC process. So you hand them a CAD drawing, and in fact, our old favorite Fusion 360 will allow you to produce sheet metal plans
for parts,
but it all gets put together and basically it's bent up automatically.
And the people I bet they're getting this from are saying, we sell you a subsystem. You're going to put your firmware in there. You're going to program it. But this is the system they're selling you.
Uh-huh.
And if you change those parameters, then we can't make that date and we can't make that cost structure.
Yeah, it's possible, but I wouldn't necessarily assume that about it. I'm trying to get like some details to see if I can still see 3D printed parts in there, but I'm not sure.
I'm not seeing anything that indicates even the extruder. They're still calling it the Nextruder, but that Nextruder looks a little bit cleaner and more advanced than the ones that are in my Prusa XL. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's definitely come through evolution, but you would expect that, given the iteration that they've gone through with their designs. So I don't know. I'm not ready to impugn their integrity at this point. I think everybody gets parts from China,
okay, now get this one.
Uh-huh.
Get this one. You can upgrade from a Mark IVs to the Core One.
How does that work?
I'm quoting.
Okay.
Mark IV Core One conversion kit upgrade for $449 US.
Okay.
The Core One is clearly a completely different machine, so you might be wondering if it's possible to convert your Mark IVs into a Core One. I'm happy to say that it absolutely is. We're preparing a Prusa Core One conversion kit just for you, aiming at release date in March 2025.
Huh.
I'm a little bit flabbergasted by that. So are you going to take the steppers? You're going to take the controller board and the user interface panel?
But does there...
I don't see what else will come over. I'm clueless.
What about the linear guides?
Yeah, I'm a little bit stunned by that.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. I mean, Prusa is all about the open source build yourself kind of market. So that's the sort of
community
they have.
Look at the Mark IVs. It's this big rectangular frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's all rods and linear bearings. There's no linear guides. There's 3D printed parts. The only thing I see that goes over to the Core One potentially is the controller board, which I'm not too sure about, and the UI panel, and maybe the stepper motors, and the Nextruder.
Yeah, going from a bed slinger to a Core XY. Yeah, I guess I can't say I really understand the point, although it is a way to, I guess, yeah, I mean, recycle some parts of your old printer. Well, it'd be interesting to see when that's actually released as to how that works, because it, yeah, it seems like there's not a whole lot of overlap there.
Well, I'd like to send out a request to our listening community that if you're out there and you're gonna do it, mm-hmm. you're gonna buy the conversion kit,
uh-huh.
please contact us and let us know what you got, because
sure.
we are really mm-hmm. curious.
Yeah, well, if the assemble yourself kit on this one is what, $984, then, you know, if you take, you know, $100 off that or something for the electronics, I mean, it seems like the parts that you could possibly carry over, with the exception possibly of the hot end, if it's the same hot end, all the other parts are pretty cheap.
Yeah, okay, then there is a link. Yeah, this opening is getting a little bit long. Yeah, no description.
Yeah.
Wait, it just popped up. It's still not giving us any uh-huh. real detail. It's just a lot of marketing gobbledygook.
Well, we'll have to look in on it when in a couple weeks when they're all launched on it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Check it out.
In the meantime, what's coming up on our show this week?
Let's see. We're going to talk about understanding your own requirements.
We're going to look at using organic supports in full contact.
And then have a quick peek at GreenGate 3D.
Let's do it. So the other day, one of our forum members, whose handle is Joshua McVeigh, 1971,
uh-huh.
Posted some pictures of his Voron. It looks like it's the bigger Voron, I think. And for good reason, Joshua must be very proud of his wonderful machine. I mean, that really is an impressive looking mm-hmm. machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand that, and I fully respect that. And Joshua asks, when are you guys going to knuckle down and build a Voron already? Now, I admit that if someone was to say to me, Andy, see this box? Build it.
Uh-huh.
I'd be like,
send you a kit.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. That sounds like fun. I would build it.
Uh-huh.
And then I'd immediately sell it. I'd immediately put it on Craigslist and sell it.
Uh-huh.
Or if it was for the person who handed me the box, I'd say, cough up $500.
Yeah, there you go.
Or maybe quite a bit more, because 40-hour build, nah, it would be quite a bit more. My time's worth more than that, quite
right.
a bit more than that. Even without a burdened rate, mm-hmm. my time's worth quite a bit more. Maybe $1,000 I would do it.
Uh-huh.
And that's an important thing to keep in mind, by the
yeah,
way.
Right.
So I wrote back on the forum that no, we're not gonna, because the Voron doesn't meet my requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It may meet yours. Does it meet
yours? Well, because it's just a single extruder.
It's a single extruder.
Yeah.
I make that very plain. And I've yep. stated this on the podcast many times before. Once you get it, you don't go back.
Right.
Once you start making full contact support your integral to your regular processes for mm-hmm. for producing stuff with your 3D printer, once you do that on a regular basis, and it's reliable and it's quick, and
yeah,
you learn how to do it,
yeah.
you never want to go back to breakaway support. Everything has to be as close as full contact support as possible, because in my experience over 13 years now of 3D printing, thousands and thousands of objects, more material than I can even guess. I mean, I could probably calculate it by looking at the motherboards of each of my machines and
uh-huh.
finding out how many hours.
Sure.
I've learned that my clients will instantly reject an object that has marring in the undersides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's unacceptable.
Right.
Even if it's minimal, it's plainly unacceptable.
Right. Well, you've also cultivated high clients with high expectations, because you've been able to deliver. right?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I can sell my printing services because they know
right.
I can do it. Whereas yeah. somebody in their living room with a Voron
uh-huh.
can't.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Now that doesn't mean the Voron's not a great machine.
Sure.
But unless you use an autoloader such as the Enraged Rabbit, or mm-hmm. you go to the cutting edge and build a tool changing capability within the Voron, now that doesn't mean you can't do that. You can do that, but it also means you've got to invest a lot more than just money here.
Right.
You've got to invest your time.
And perhaps your sanity.
And your possibly your sanity to get it to work right.
Yep.
And in my experience with the E3D tool changer, that could take 6 months to a year to get it uh-huh. to a level which you get relatively quickly with the Prusa XL. The Prusa XL, I had it running reliably right out of the box. Mm-hmm. Right after I installed everything and got it running.
Yeah.
If I followed their instructions and did it exactly the way they wanted me to do it, worked.
Yeah.
Now, when I went my own way, of course, I had to change things
sure.
and modify and, you know, tweak settings. But I was at a capability with the Prusa XL within a week, which took me months with the E3D. So I can imagine if I was going to build a Voron, I'm looking at least a week of the build, mm-hmm. at least maybe anywhere from 5 to 7 days to build it. Another couple
those
of days.
Relatively full days.
Yeah.
I mean, another, that's a lot of work.
Another yeah. couple of days or another possibly a week to get it printing optimally.
Uh-huh.
And then, I know some people out there probably have already been there, done that, saying, oh, I did it within a few hours. That's great. Maybe a few hours.
Uh-huh.
But then to then look into the tool changing methods that are out there, which we know of at least two, possibly three.
Right.
Yeah, they look great and it would be cool to have that, but that's going to take another pile of time mm-hmm. to make the parts, install them, and then make the G-code changes and tweaking. Yep. That takes time. Time that I'd rather use on Fusion 360, making things that I could yeah. sell or for my clients or to walk my dog. I mean, yeah, there's only so much time in the day. Now, I do recognize the value. There's multiple reasons to build your own.
Uh-huh.
Number one is it's fun. It can be a ton of fun, and it has been for a lot of kits that you and I have built.
Yep.
Two, you are intimately familiar with exactly how that machine is put together and taken apart.
Yeah, and not afraid to
right, not afraid
fix
to take it apart
and take things apart and put them back right. together when you need to.
Right.
So,
there's value in building it yourself. But right now, Joshua, man, it just doesn't meet my requirements. And you've got to understand your requirements. Are you 3D printing because you want to produce a specific thing, or because you want to generate revenue through selling your services to somebody, or do you want to build, you're making parts to support your hobby, whatever that may be, mm-hmm. whatever.
Or you just want a really fast printer.
Understand those requirements, because in my experience, the Voron meets the requirement of someone who wants to build it, to be intimately familiar with it, and get optimal performance from it.
Uh-huh.
Sans full contact support, unless
yeah.
you add it, unless you can somehow add that, which more than doubles the complexity, in my opinion.
Right.
Doubles it. So, meh.
Yeah. I mean, someday the tool changers will become more evolved and maybe more standardized than a Voron.
Well, let's move away from intrinsic motivating reasons uh-huh. and look at extrinsic cost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm going to build a Voron, it's going to be the biggest one. The best kits out there are around $1,300 uh-huh. LDO, with the best steppers, the best linear slides, the best controller boards, around $1,200 to $1,300. There's no way I would put in plastic parts in a heated containment.
Right.
I'm sorry, folks. I know that the community says it's good, but in my experience,
and you may be able to get away with it sometimes.
You may be. People have been getting away with it, with the Replicator 2 for years of operation. But I would say, not me. So I would spend another $400 to $500 to get the machined aluminum stuff from Matter Hackers or someplace. I would go to Matter Hackers and get it. So right now I'm looking at let's say 13, add another four, at $1,700 for about $600 more plus shipping. I can get a two tool Prusa XL.
Right.
Another $500 for the enclosure.
Right.
So that's about $3,000.
But you don't need the enclosure.
I don't need the enclosure.
And the thing is, the Prusa is fully assembled, or at least 99% assembled. You have to put the extruders on or something.
I would say that within 3 hours max, unless you're totally inept or there's something broken, you'll be printing rather than a week and a half or so. So, you know, it's, you know, my time is more valuable to me, but I'm sure there are folks out there where they may not be able to afford it, and they're on a strict budget. Your solution.
But if you're on a strict budget, there's a lot less expensive printers that you could get than that.
That's true.
So I don't know that that's a really a great use case. But I would say, I mean, it's for people who want to be part of that community and want to build a machine and want to build a pretty banging machine, with the caveat that it's only single extruder.
Now, I know of folks who have printed Dragons and all sorts of tchotchkes that they sell at state fairs, who have contacted me and talked with me since we've been talking about them.
Yeah.
At least three different people.
Uh-huh.
And they're all using Mendel machines, inexpensive Mendel machines.
Sure.
And they get their speed of throughput through their system by simply duplicating the machine and not necessarily having fast machines.
All right. I mean, for the cost of one Voron, you could have probably 10 Ender 3s. Right.
Many? No, not that many. Maybe five. Man, I wouldn't get an Ender 3. I would get the bigger one. I get the...
Okay.
I forget the name.
You can get a printer in the sub $300 range that will produce acceptable output in many use cases.
It could be optimal. I mean, it's not going to be perfect. You're going to have to adjust the Delrin wheels, and you're going to have to keep it clean.
Right? Yeah, there is maintenance that has to go on,
right.
And it's going to be slow. And if you try to push it faster, it'll going to degrade the quality.
It'll affect the quality.
Sure. Yeah, and it's not as cool as a Voron.
Voron is cool. I admit that right up front.
Sure.
Voron is a cool machine.
But a rack of three or six or eight Enders is going to way outperform the throughput of it. Yeah.
So. But for my needs, if I can't do full contact support, I ain't going to buy it. Mm-hmm. Which means if I'm going to spend a penny on another machine, it's got to meet my requirements. Doesn't have to be as big a build area. Could be a smaller build area. But it's got to have separate dual extrusion capability, either an IDEX. There's a version of a dual extruder you can get where it rotates back and forth. It is a Bowden extruder. Gotcha. But even that would get you reliable and quick full contact support.
Sure.
And that's an important one, reliable and quick. I don't care if this sounds like a broken record. I'm going to do it anyway.
Uh-oh. What are we talking about?
Full contact support.
That was going to be my guess, but I didn't want to be mean and, you know.
Of course. But so I get a call from a client. This client is an engineering firm. Their specialty are those vending machines that you see in parking areas where, you know, you pay the money and you get the little piece of paper that says you're allowed to park there.
Ticket. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and they're constantly designing new ones because their clientele varies for different reasons, airports versus street parking versus parking structures. Mm-hmm. So there's different sizes, machines, different types of designs for different purposes, and they work in different ways. So I'm constantly getting calls from these guys to 3D print their designs And then they take those designs and they put them into the machine that they're modifying or, mm-hmm. or updating to see how well it fits, to see how well it works.
Right.
So my prints that I do for them have to be 100% representative
right.
of what's going to be made in metal.
Has to be perfect.
Has to yeah. be perfect. Yeah. Now, of course, when they make it in metal, it costs a lot more, and yeah. they make a lot of them.
Right.
When they make them in metal, they're made by bending sheets of metal and welding parts together.
Uh-huh.
They're not made as CNC parts. They're right. not made as molds. They're not that kind
yeah,
of
not casting
production
or machining.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the samples that the files I get from these guys have thin walls. There's all thin walls with very, very difficult overhangs.
Yeah, no, that's very challenging. Yeah.
So if you're interested in seeing what I'm talking about, I did post images of this part on our forum. Look for let's see, what's it called? Full contact support use case.
Okay.
Just look for it there. And you'll see photographs of what I'm referring to. And if you could look over on my screen, the far one, take a look at the part.
Oh, yeah. Geez.
So the part is like sheet metal. There's overhangs everywhere. There's a sheet of metal that comes up at a diagonal from the bottom of this box-like structure
uh-huh.
that goes all the way to the top of the other side of this box-like structure.
Uh-huh.
And this sheet of metal is all overhang. And it has to reflect what the real metal will do for
right.
me to successfully make this as a sample for them to
it
test.
It has to be perfect. It can't be drooping. It can't be
sagging.
Can't
be drooping. There can't be there yep. can't be any marring underneath.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to do it as full contact support for this to work correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And now the real challenge that I had before I even sliced was since I'm doing full contact support, I'm printing this object in PETG and I'm going to use PLA for my support structures. However, when you do that, you must set your support to only generate from the bed.
Uh-huh.
Because it will not print on top of the right. other material. You can only print from a spot on the bed. Well, when you've got overhangs over the part itself, that becomes a problem.
Right, yeah. So you have to have support that kind of goes from the bed out and around and then back into
right.
where you need it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you can make your own supports to
right.
do that.
Yeah, that wouldn't be that hard to do.
But it turns out that the type of support that I least like in Prusa Slicer
uh-huh.
does the job in ways that are so mind-boggling that it was worth putting this up on our podcast
okay.
at the risk of sounding so redundant that everybody's going, oh, there he goes again. So I turned on organic support
okay.
type.
That's like the trees.
It looks like little trees,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I had no idea what was going to happen, but I've used it in the past, and what it does is it'll print from off to the side
mm-hmm.
and grow the support structures sideways to get uh-huh. underneath
yeah.
to work. And I printed these little wheels that way.
Uh-huh.
They're like they've got a slot in them.
Right.
And
yeah.
and I ideally I print them on their side,
uh-huh.
but to get the slot to be clean, because that's got a ride rail,
uh-huh.
I put in little organic
uh-huh.
Full contact supports.
Uh-huh.
And it comes out perfectly clean,
yeah,
perfectly
yeah.
nice.
Very nice.
So I that same approach for this box structure. Well, when I hit the slice button, I got an amazing surprise.
Uh-huh.
Now, I expected the tree structures on the side of the box opening, on the inner box opening.
Right.
What I didn't expect was there are these little screw holes that are uh-huh. on the base of this box, right? It generated
it's building trees up through them.
Through the holes. It goes through the holes. And you see this one
yeah.
over here? It came through a large hole and then
yep.
branched all the way out into a whole bunch of tree structures
yeah.
all to go underneath that overhang.
That's brilliant that the algorithm is actually clever enough to do that.
Yeah.
yeah.
I was like, wow. Now it printed fine first time.
Uh-huh.
I admit, if you look at the picture, there's a shadow that makes the layers look like they're not good, but that's pure light. That if
uh-huh.
you look at it with the light straight on. It's the same from one corner to the other. So don't look at that. That shadow is false.
Okay.
Where there was a defect was on the overhang at the top of the box.
Uh-huh.
For reasons I'm not sure, I think the Pechi itself kind of gunked up.
Uh-huh.
And it lifted a tiny, tiny bit, but that's still within the tolerance for the part.
Uh-huh.
It just wasn't perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, this was a perfect print.
Yeah.
And I was stunned.
Otherwise, an almost impossible one to do.
Yeah. And it's $50.
Jeez.
Right there, $50.
$50 is all you're charging for that?
Well, jeez. It only took an hour to print.
Oh, okay.
If it was 8 hours, I'd charge accordingly. But it only took an hour to print, and it didn't use very much material at all. Because remember, these are thin walls.
Did it use, though?
Not mine at all, because I just pushed a button, and the organic slot, the organic supports popped up. Right. I didn't do anything.
But you had to know the button to push. And
well, no. Anybody could have done that.
I don't know if I would say that.
Yeah, well, anyways, case, if you're listening and you're thinking, okay, Andy, I'm sick of this. What is this? What do I have to do to get these full contact supports? Well, for one, you have to have a machine that could do more than one material. Now, you can do it with an auto-loading device like the MMU or the Enraged Rabbit. You can, however, your purge has to take the different materials into account, and you have to use a purge tower that doesn't blend the materials.
Gosh, what a pain
in the ass. Cura can do that, but Cura, I don't know how to do full contact supports with Cura. I don't know how to do it. Other than that, I don't know how to separate completely the purging.
Yeah, you're better off with an IDEX.
Yeah, changer. Even with an IDEX and a tool changer, you still have to do some priming. Mm-hmm. However, I didn't need it for this particular print, and I'm not sure why, but I really didn't need it. With two materials, Prusa slicer's fine. Three materials, it's fine. Four materials, it'll still do a good tower. Five materials, no.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do four different colors of Pechi with PLA for your support. It won't work.
Mm.
And I've tried to complain to them about it, and they ignore me. Mm-hmm. I've even got people agreeing with me on the GitHub, and they still will not fix this, unfortunately. but you can do three colors and PLA, and it'll still build a priming structure that'll work correctly.
Cool.
Your settings should, let me bring up Prusa Slicer, because it's not just your distance in, let me read them to you. The most important setting is not the style. It could be all three styles, organic, and we're talking Prusa Slicer. Mm-hmm. Organic, it could be grid, it could be snug, but you want to set the top contact to Z distance to zero, and it shows in parentheses soluble.
Uh-huh.
That shows right there that the folks at Prusa Slicer don't see what we're doing as something that they understand.
Well, not yet. They will, though. The whole world will know someday.
If you're doing snug or organic, snug or grid, you want to use, the rectilinear pattern refers to that surface. If you go with concentric, it'll draw the same shape. That's the pattern that's going to show up on your undersides.
Mm-hmm.
So pick that pattern carefully. I always go rectilinear.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me a nice smooth surface on the top, assuming the top is flat. So I go rectilinear. And then the other really important thing that you have to look at is the interface pattern spacing. Is that the correct one? No, that's not right. That may be, you've got to make it so that it's a solid flat surface. And if you don't set that correctly, you'll get the lines further apart. And when you get the lines of the top further apart, the overhang material goes in there and it makes it difficult to remove, and you'll get some kind of a ugly pattern. Let's see, pattern angle should be zero. Pattern spacing, I have it two. I'm pretty sure it's interface pattern spacing. You also want to set XY separation between the object and the support to around 80% or less.
Okay.
Because you want to have room on the sides to be able to remove the stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've had many times where I've done this and it's a solid mass of plastic, you won't be able to get in there to get the stuff out. You can't break it off.
Right.
So you want some room on the sides as well. I think it's interface pattern spacing. I'd set that to zero. Or is it? I'm not sure. And you want a couple of layers at the top because you want it strong.
Right.
You only put one layer, you're not going to get a solid, clean pattern underneath. So experiment with it. And after you play with these settings, do the profile, do the preview. Go up and down, look at the preview, because that's what's going to show on the underside of your object. And I know I say this a lot, but guys, if you're printing for someone else and there's marring, that's a fail. You can't sell that.
Well, it depends. If your client will buy it, you can sell it, but most won't.
Most won't.
And especially when you've got guys like you around here who can do it without the marring.
Or someone with a Stratasys machine. That uses soluble supports.
Yep.
You'll never be able to match that quality unless you do this.
Yeah.
That's why I say, okay, no more single extruder machines for me. I'm not going to buy them.
Yep.
Nope. Yep. Not going to do it. Yeah, this one's a little bit overdue, and we may have already done it a long time ago and forgotten about it. There was a question on our forum about what's a quality PETG. That's a good question, because PETG varies quite a bit. I used to be Overture worked really well for me, opaque Overture. These days, it's terrible. I've tried everything. Maybe wait another 6 months and try again, but I don't know if I want to. Mm. There's also off brands like Klinroot. And I've got a couple of spools from there, and those spools, they dribble a lot. You get a lot of those really fine, wispy, trailing strings, no matter what
really
you do,
annoying.
There's no way around it. That's PETG. But some of the best PETG I've ever had comes from a company, which I apologize if we have not reviewed these guys before. They deserve it. They're in the United States. They're called Greengate 3D. And they like to state that they use recycled plastic. They make a pretty bold statement about it, too. They said they've been involved with materials since 1994, with a company called Universal in 1994.
Hmm.
And they've been involved with recycling PVC and all sorts of other materials. And they state that Greengate 3D is 100% recycled, 100% American-made 3D filament. We use scrap plastics, only scrap plastics, and we only extrude those materials in the United States of America. Well, that last part's not really an important criterion for me. I'll buy it from anywhere if it's, from a quality company. Although I do like the idea that I'm buying it from the country that I reside in. All of that aside, all of the thing about the recycling aside, the thing about being in the USA aside, put all that to the side. This stuff's really good material. I've really, really good luck with, and I got to state right up front that I ordered the most difficult PETG you can buy. Clear, uncolored, translucent is the most difficult PETG. It's the ultimate test of how good your formulation is. This stuff's great. I bought clear. I bought green translucent. I bought orange translucent and a red translucent. Whole suite of them so I could do translucent multicolor objects. And it works. This is good stuff. I'm giving a thumbs up to Greengate 3D. I hope they retain their quality. And both within colors and between, I would recommend them. Mm-hmm. They're not cheap. They're not going to be the cheapest you can buy.
$32 a spool.
It does range in price from $100 a spool to $20-something dollars a spool.
Mm-hmm.
Each color is different depending upon how they made it. They make interesting artisan colors, different colors than what you can get elsewhere. One thing I would point out, though, is if you're looking at colors that are definable according to, what is it, Pantone?
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you're doing UForge stuff and you need specific colors, probably not the way to go.
Well, yeah, if you're trying to match somebody else's HueForge colors,
right?
But you could load up a rainbow of these and characterize them yourselves in HueForge if
you
wanted
to. So. You sure can.
Yeah, it's interesting. They do have a product line of high temperature PETG, which is virgin material, but they do have a lot of recycled stuff.
Do you see any PCTG up in there?
PC.
I don't think they have PCTG.
No, I'm not seeing any of that.
Oh, wow.
But it is, it's a cool product line. And the nice thing about PETG is pretty much the only plastic that we actually recycle in this country.
Unfortunately.
And that's because all of those damn single-use plastic water bottles are PETG. But that is, you are able to get those as a commodity of recycled plastics because they're only ever held water, so they're clean, and they're fairly uniform in terms of their material. So that's about what we actually recycle. So it's nice to see somebody's actually making filament, and the filament is viable out of it, because we had some earlier attempts at recycled PET filament
that didn't work at all. Yeah, so Greengate 3D. Thanks.
Sweet.
Oh boy, Whitney, another show written to the hard drive, waiting for encoding, uploading, and commitment on our feed to all of our very supportive listeners. Thank you all out there for your support on Patreon. Thanks for all those positive reviews. We really enjoy seeing those. And hey, thanks for listening. We're doing it for fun. We're not here to make a buck. We're not here to sell anything. We're not here to be influencers either. We're here just to gab, just to talk about stuff that we find interesting and fun to do.
You bet. And we hope if you're still listening by this point in the show, you probably think it's fun too.
I think so. And speaking of fun, my partner has the thing of the week.
I do. This is the Gadget Occupant et Marrant, which...
It's made with snails?
No. Well, it does have a kind of a coily thing in it.
Hmm.
Google Translate describes this as a fun and busy gadget. I would call it sort of a fidget clock. This is a cool little... it's basically a clockwork mechanism that you use like a little... like a keychain retainer spring.
Typically used for people that work at companies with badges that open up doors so that you can grab your badge and
put it on the key reader and then
let it go, and it snaps and it back and whacks you in the jaw.
Yeah, so you can get those fairly readily, although I think there is a 3D printed spring option. But
if you're brave,
but the metal spring's probably going to work better. But it looks like a lot of fun. It's a fairly complex mechanism, but pretty easy to print. And it comes to us from a Thingiverse user called 3D Superfan, who appears to be a 14-year-old French kid, otherwise known as Thibaut Mons from France. And it's interesting because I think somebody else did the video for him. Because the narration of the video is in English and sounds like an older person doing it, whereas all the rest of the description and everything is all in French.
Oh, I just saw one of the comments. Ouch.
Uh-oh.
There's a part missing.
Wow.
Ooh, too late.
Too late.
Of the week. It's a thing of the week anyway.
It's a thing of the week anyway.
Yeah, this says the big ring part is not in list.
Huh. Well, I can see it there.
Oh, I see it. So, I see it. Maybe they added it.
So I'm not sure. But anyways, it's thing number 6807062. The Gadget Occupant et Marrant.
If you've got a tip, a question, or a candidate thing of the week, what are you waiting for? Send us an email.
Send it to info@3dprintingtoday.com. That's T-H-R-E-E, followed by the letter D, followed by printingtoday.com.
And I'd like to invite everyone, again, to join our free forum on Google Groups. There's no ads. There's no spamming. There's no flame wars.
There's no nonsense.
There's no nonsense. And there's a lot of interesting conversation and a lot of information. If you'd like to join the forum, you get to you can take part, you can ask questions, you can actually get to me in kind of, not real time, but asynchronous.
Pretty close,
asynchronously.
Yeah, pretty close.
Just go to Google and type in 3D printing tips and tricks. It'll take you there. And when you get there, if you want to post, you got to give Google Groups an email. You'll see that little join group button on the lower right-hand side. Don't give them your personal email. Don't do that. No, don't. Instead, go to Gmail, make a Gmail account just for this purpose, and use that Gmail account related whenever you do stuff related to this thing, and log in with that Gmail account. In this way, if somebody gets in there and scrapes all the emails off to send spam out, it's going to go to Gmail and not
that anyone on our forum would do that.
No,
you never know.
You never know. Let's see. We do have a show next week.
We do. Show number 552. We talk about the impact of updates.
And we're going to talk about printing speeds.
And we're going to look at shelf curling.
And I think that's our Thanksgiving show.
Oh.
Wow. So happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. If you are in a part of the world where they celebrate Thanksgiving, if you're not, just be thankful.
Yeah, there's lots to be thankful for right now. I guess that's it.
Great. Thanks for listening.